I'm Laura.
And I'm Sasha. Welcome to our podcast.
Portals is a show about the strange experience of being human. We're interested in looking at the ways our particular mammal brains see and interact with the world around us.
In Portals, we explore the ways we weave loss into life. We'll be talking together and with guests about four main themes: portals, feelings, loss, and trust. We're glad you're here. Welcome.
We'd love to have you come look out at the world with us.
So I've been doing some reading about ambiguous loss, and I know I've talked with you a little bit about what this is or what I've learned recently about it, because I've only come to this fairly recently. And when I heard about it, what really resonated with me was it spoke to and kind of captured the loss I experienced for many years with my mother, who was really struggling with addiction and mental illness. And I guess I wanted to share a bit about what that was like for me with this new lens of ambiguous loss, but also to talk about how the other ways it might show up in our lives and maybe we've seen play out around us. Have you heard about ambiguous loss before I brought it up, started bothering you about it?
I don't think I'd heard the term. No, I think you are the first person to bring me that term.
To bring that to you.
As you are with many terms. Okay. You're a real good term bringer.
Yeah, I try. One thing that I, in my reading up on it, and this is the piece that really, I was like, it helps me have compassion for myself in this moment and others struggling with this kind of thing, is there's this idea that something's causing you pain and find closure, work on it, get past it. You know, like it's still bothering you. Why is this still lingering? Like, maybe have you gone to therapy? Have you sorted this out? And some pain, though, it's beyond closure. It's more about learning to be with and find your footing where things are ambiguous. There isn't a discrete moment. It's not, this is the end and now we shall grieve it. It is a grief that's kind of embedded all along the way. Mm. I think the overlap with trauma, PTSD, I'm sure is huge, but I'm not a psychologist and I don't, yeah. What comes up for you?
Well, see, it's so interesting when you're saying that because I have layers of feelings. Layer number one, in some ways, I feel like what loss isn't ambiguous? Like as you're talking, I was like, oh, well, if I'm thinking about it as that way, as like loss that has no discrete edges, then to me, that feels like every loss. But also, I think when we were talking about how strange it is that people, that so many people feel like there's a category of loss that's real loss, that, you know, and that category is really quite small, I think. It's like death. And death out of time. So like it doesn't count if it's your old grandma so much. And then sometimes divorce. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it. Is that it for like the things that are like universally agreed as like, yes, that's loss.
Yeah. I mean, I think culturally, I'm sure there's other ways of looking at this. But I think in general, yeah, like family systems shifting. Like, for example, in the same bucket with divorce, Pauline Boss, who came up with this idea of ambiguous loss in the 70s, she put in that same category things like family separation due to immigration. So she broke it down into two types. And one type, which is a divorce would fall here, but not death. Death is discrete. But she put divorce in one of these ambiguous loss categories. So let me just tell you what these types are. And you tell me, I want to know what you think about them. Because I'm still sorting out how I feel about this. All I know is that it spoke to me in this way of like validating something I hadn't quite put my finger on. That it was not this linear, find closure and fix yourself kind of a, you know, model. This was like a, this is just going to be a thing that's just hard to see.
I have so many thoughts.
Okay. So here are the two types. One is, I know. Okay. Well, good. Yay. Physical absence with psychological presence. So the person's away, but you're with them and you're, mm-hmm. you feel them and you're connected to them. So,
and that Pauline says that ambiguous loss.
Yeah. Divorce,
mm-hmm.
kidnapping.
Sure. Physical separation, but emotional connection.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other type would be psychological absence with physical presence.
Ah, yes. It's interesting. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So types might be emotional or cognitive absence. So dementia,
yeah.
mental illness,
mm-hmm.
and others. And some of these, she even says some catastrophic things can fall into this ambiguous loss category.
So interesting.
Yeah. It's not resolvable, but it makes you question then what is resolvable.
Yeah. I find, okay. So I want to talk about it on a couple of different levels.
Please
like
do.
One of the things I want to talk about is like, I find it really interesting, and I don't know that this is a conversation for today, but I find it really interesting how different people respond to categorization. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a little bit like, I tend to be resistant to categorization, like, and sometimes I think maybe more resistant than is useful, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of working on it. I'm working on that.
Working on that?
Yeah. Trying to get more comfortable with like...
Be like, here's some boxes like, for things, and I'm okay. Like baking things here, spices well, there. Is that okay?
I love an organized box. You know how much I love
yes.
an organized box.
Well, that's what's so interesting.
But I'm sort of like, well, but if we start naming all the categories, then doesn't that in some way, I mean, I can see how that in many ways is liberating and really validating because you're like, oh my God, that's my thing. And you just said it out loud, Pauline. Like mm-hmm. Pauline said my thing.
Yeah.
Pauline said my thing and that it's real.
Yeah.
So I also feel like, well, what if Pauline doesn't say my thing? You know, like when you start naming things, then there's an assumption. When you don't name anything for me, that means everything exists. But when you start naming specific things, and I think for some people, when you don't name them, that means nothing exists. But when Pauline starts naming particular things, then I start feeling like, oh no, she's not going to name my thing. And then, well, that means my thing doesn't exist. So I like very much the idea, the big blanket idea of ambiguous loss, because I feel like loss is ambiguous. And like when you were talking about the idea of how this notion that we work through loss chronologically in a finite way, like toward a finite end, mm-hmm. that feels really strange and mechanical to me. It's like a mechanical description of an organic process. Mm. And so anything that moves away from that feels helpful. And any descriptions that allow movement away from that feel really helpful to me.
Yeah. I agree with you there.
Yeah. On the one hand, I feel like I want to just talk about this idea as a thing that moves us away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Like this allows for movement away from that. And then there's the other part of my brain that's like, oh, but this is also that. Like this is another variation. You know, like there's a way in which it's also, do you know what I mean? Like that's using that to create movement away from it.
Right.
So I think that that's sort of a separate conversation. Like how do the categories create the option for more ambiguity? Mm-hmm. How does structure allow for a brighter display of the chaos? Because those two things, I think, are collaborators.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they're opponents. I think they're collaborators. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is an example of them collaborating. Like,
mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like a little meta, though. So maybe we should just
I'd like to speak to that before going down under into the weeds a little bit. No, I think you're absolutely onto something. And it comes up for me as well, but I just hadn't named it in that way. I hadn't labeled it. But, you know, this idea that a structure and terms and definitions can be both liberating and confining at the same time, it can breathe life into something and be validating and affirming. Like, I'm seen. And there are others who, like, could share, like, this is a thing I felt and now I know. Oh, that's what it is. It's like this itch. And then someone's like, some people have this strange itch between their shoulder blades. And then you're like, that's what it is. It's bothered me my whole life. And now I know. But then again, it's kind of confining because you might not connect with people who have like itches in other places. Mm-hmm. And maybe actually that doesn't matter, that distinction. And maybe you were so set on finding that particular connection point. And I feel this way with labels and structures and organization too, where especially when it comes to defining something so almost in defiance, like it defies organization mm-hmm. classification. But that's almost, I guess, what I want to talk about is this, for me, my experience with my mother, and I've had mm-hmm. some other smaller, like I think we've all experienced some of this kind of thing, especially in this pandemic year. Mm-hmm. It was just this nebulous feeling that I just was with me for decades, and this feeling of loss that was present. And when my mother died last August, I said, I felt like I've been in grief's waiting room for a decade. And then when I started reading about this, they talk about frozen grief. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think that's what I was getting at, is it's when closure is hard or impossible to attain, and you can become just, I'm just sitting with this. The thing that comes up for me when I say that, though, is it makes it, what makes me so excited about our project is it makes it sound as if sitting with grief and being with it is bad. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a judgment about, there's the feeling and then there's the panic about it. And then there are the messages you get about mm-hmm. how you should be handling this. Mm-hmm. And I know my first order of business was to try to, people who didn't understand, you know, I tried to dial down those messages of how I should be responding to things with my mother, or how I should be healing myself. And I'm like, it just is a gaping wound. And I'm just walking around with a gaping wound, and I'm just a wounded person. Mm-hmm. But what if, kind of like we've talked about with spring, there's things breaking apart while new life comes, mm-hmm. right? There's some utility to the grief. It's not in and of itself a thing to get through. It is something, I don't want to say a gift, because that it, mm-hmm. it's a really painful gift. I like the reframing of it as, instead of like, all right, roll up your sleeves, people. Here are the five stages. We're going to get through this sucker in a linear fashion. And here are the tools.
So I feel like there's a part where you had this thing that was going on inside of you for years and years and years, where you had a mother. If someone looked at you, you didn't have external markers that clearly indicated loss had happened. And people who knew you better understood that your mother was challenging, and that she wasn't available to be a mother to you in an ideal way. And so people who knew you better might understand that equates to loss, some kind of loss. But it wasn't, because our society does categorize things, because humans categorize things, and it didn't fit into one of the like three categories we have for loss, or I think honestly two categories that mm-hmm. we communally have for loss. Mm-hmm. I would say maybe three. It was something that your own brain didn't get to name, didn't get to talk about, maybe. Yeah. Like it got to feel it. It had to feel it. It had no like option but to feel it. Mm-hmm. But it couldn't talk to itself about it. Even though maybe it could talk to itself about it because it knew that it was there, mm-hmm. it couldn't call it anything. Mm-hmm. It's like names are very important for humans.
It feels sometimes slippery without a name, because it, mm-hmm. it, you know, it can show up and you're like, what is this? And I'm like, well, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what that other thing was either. And you look at the available boxes and you're like, well, I don't think those are it, yeah. you know? And then you just, yeah. at least if you're me, you might discount then. You might think, well, I'm doing it wrong. Yeah. And
right.
like, oh, I'm just seeing this. I'll try it a different way, instead of honoring this thing for what it is for mm-hmm. me.
I think that there's a real thing about value. One of the things that you were talking about was how, well, the way I worded it inside of my head when you were talking was like the way that we devalue grief as, like, we think of it as a bad thing. We think of it as like a poison to try to get out of the garden, you know, like, oh, grief is sprouted in our garden. How can we get rid of grief? Oh, there's 10 steps to get rid of it, and then the garden will be healthy again. Mm-hmm. As opposed to imagining it as a continuous presence in the garden, which is required for it. It's regenerative. It's like things have to die, and they have to die for the garden to survive. And there's grief in that process. The grief is the thing that digests the fallen bits and makes their nutrients available to the living bits to recycle. And then the living bits die. And then it happens again. And when you only have two or three instances of death, of separation, of loss that you count, where you're just like, these three plants are, we will allow them to cycle, but we'll only allow them to cycle in a very particular way. We'll very rigidly control their cycle, and it is only three spots where we'll even acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. You just end up with this very depleted garden. Also, though, in some cases you end up with a depleted garden because I think some people can succeed at doing that. Mm-hmm. I think other people like you have a garden that has all the stuff breaking down and getting eaten, and it's like, mm-hmm. you never stop to doing all of that stuff, but you just couldn't really talk about it with other people. Like, yeah. Is that right? Like your garden, me, I'll just make it secret. I just have a secret garden. Like I'm going to do all that stuff, but I will pretend like I'm not. You know, like people have different strategies for coping with the fact that it's not real. It's not like mm-hmm. possible. And then I think there's a million strategies to trying to get back. And one of them is this, is having people say, no, there's not three, there's 57.
Right.
Or like 114.
Yeah.
And that helps. And depending on who you are, you have to find the thing that, you know, or you can find a bunch of things that are useful. And so it feels to me like the ambiguity of like having people say out loud, it's not just death, divorce, and sickness. Mm-hmm. Those are the three things that we have identified and maintained, like we have been willing to maintain value and mm-hmm. maybe war. Like maybe four. Maybe there are four mm-hmm. things that were widely, like if you say, I have cancer, mm-hmm. I'll be like, oh, I understand that you're in like a time of loss. Yeah. But if you say, I just moved, mm-hmm. then we're like, oh.
Right. And, you know, it makes me think, I have a dear friend who just moved this past year for the first time after 20 years. And I've known her for almost 16 years now. And we used to live in the same state. I subsequently moved to Georgia and then Washington and now Illinois. And my friend said, oh my gosh, I have a new appreciation for what it's like to move. And you told me what it was like. Like you told me like, oh, I'm having to find not only just doctors and dentists and my grocery store, but I'm like, I don't know my people. Like I don't even know how to get around. The weather is new. Like there's a lot that's new. The allergens are new. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is new. And when she experienced this, what she said, and this also kind of ties back, is it can be hard to recognize this kind of loss in others until you experience it. And sometimes it can be specific. That was an example where it was exactly the same kind of loss. It's like, this is all mm-hmm. related to moving and relocating. Mm-hmm. And she could hear me. And she's a very sympathetic friend and she was supportive of me. But like, oh, like the gut check.
Yeah.
This is hard. Yeah. It's hard to uproot. Like it's hard mm-hmm. to start over yeah. again and again and again. And this plays out in so many different ways for so yeah. many different people all the time. Everyone has their little corners or pockets or parts of their garden that are just in some sort of turmoil or...
Yeah. And I think that it's so scary. I think in our culture, because we don't really know each other for the most part, like even the people we trust quite a lot, we don't tend to have known them forever. And they mm-hmm. usually haven't like saved our lives. Like we don't know them the way we probably did when we were evolving for the first thousands and thousands of years that we were humans. I think it's just real, real scary to rest in fear. And I think that grief and loss involve fear. And it's really scary to rest in that. Mm-hmm. It's really scary to rest in that.
It's yeah.
And it's really scary to rest in it if you're not around people you trust deeply. And it's really hard in this world. We really undervalue how much is asked of us I think about it a lot with my job. Like, people come and they lay down on a table and take off all their clothes, and they've never met me before, and they tell me what hurts. And that is an enormous trust act. Like, that's ridiculous. No animal should do that. And we do it, and we do it all the time. And we think if you don't want to, then you're a little bit odd. Mm-hmm. They know you're a little bit uptight. But I think in order to do that, what we have to do is our brains have to do this kind of like qualifying. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe what part of what has happened with that kind of qualifying is that we've taken the stuff that's really scary because we're constantly trusting strangers in a way that is unusual. We maybe take the stuff that's really precarious, like really scary and hot and tricky, and we just shove it away, and we don't even access it. And we don't have to survive anymore. We used to have to survive, but now we don't. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a tremendously big challenge to ask people to consider the possibility that they are living with loss all the time.
Yeah.
And that is, for me, a place where containers help. Because if there's a container, I don't have to be at sea with it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really pleased that Pauline, and I think that that's the thing that I love about a structure. I mean, in this case, I love that about this structure. Like, I can trust you more if I have a structure. Since we don't really know each other, we do, you and I. But like,
in general, one with another one. Yes.
The structure makes it a little more safe. If I'm going to do this ludicrous thing where I trust you even though you're a stranger, the structure makes it a little more safe, mm-hmm. I think, maybe. Because, yeah, think about all of the categories of loss that are mm-hmm. outside of death, divorce, and sickness.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I mentioned PTSD earlier. And before, like, veterans and other people who were suffering from what we now know as PTSD, before they were able to identify it and name it, they were felt isolated and like they were a failure. Like, they maybe mm-hmm. weren't doing it right. Like, why can't I just be fine? Other people did this and they're okay. But then to say, oh, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. this has impacted me. I have this thing I carry. Mm-hmm. And here it is.
And you named it. And so yeah. I don't have to just unearth the creature from my heart and hold it out in my palm. I can start by taking your box mm-hmm. and then seeing if I have anything that sort of matches. You know, it's like,
yeah,
look for something that's blue and shaped like an acorn. Like, oh, I have something that it's not, I never thought it was an acorn shape before. But now that you mention it, yeah, it is blue and shaped like an acorn.
Exactly. Is it
this? Now let's talk about what you have. And then slowly, slowly you can personalize it. Yeah. But to just be like, blah.
You're the frightening thing. It's like tentacles. Like, and
has anyone ever seen this before? Do you guys have one of these? You know? It's like, no, that's too much. Not unless if I don't know your great-great-grandmother and she didn't save my great-great-grandmother blood at least 11 times, yeah. Then I can't
right. pull it off. Right. No, I think it's so true. And when I first started sharing about my mother in my blog about 11 years ago now or so, it was a way, I kept it anonymous, but I shared it with my friends because I didn't want my mom to find it, but I really needed to voice what I was going through. Like, I needed an outlet that wasn't just my journal and wasn't basically going to my kids' preschool pickup and then having my monster come out and be like, ah, you know, because it was off-putting and hard to manage. It's hard to manage, like, mm-hmm. the intimacy. Yeah. I go from zero to, like, consuming you, you know, and I'm like, this is not right. Like, there's got to be a way of saying, how are you today? Where I say, I'm wrestling with this really big thing. It's blue and acorn shaped. Mm-hmm. And then they might be like, I'm sorry.
I've heard about the acorn shaped blue thing. And they're like, I have heard.
Yeah.
About it. Yeah.
But you can then choose to go further or just be there with that.
I like that a lot. Like, this is the deal now, right? Like, we're not going back. This is what we have. So what can we make to work within this structure so that we can have richer, better soil, you know, like in our front yards and our backyards? Because we're not going to be Like, it's not going to be a return to, I'm not going to walk the fields and with the seasons and the geese come. It's going to be like this. It's going to be cities and buses. And so what can we do? And right, I love the idea of being like, well, if I can name a thing, then we can start with that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because so many of my things aren't, my things don't show up inside me with names ever. And I think I have a certain degree of comfort with that. And I kind of like it. Mm-hmm. I like how it feels to not have named things. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of me that really wants to keep it because I don't like the idea that if you offer me a name and then I call my thing by that name, I'll start thinking it's that instead mm-hmm. of knowing it deeply. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
I want to know my stuff in a primary way without the intervention of the category.
Yeah.
And sometimes my brain tells me that it's going to get messed up, that if I have a category, it'll distance me from it and I will lose it. Mm. But I actually think that that's sort of just a pendulum swing in the other direction.
Mm-hmm. I see the wisdom to that. And I think as you were speaking, that was resonating as well. I remember feeling that way when I was in graduate school for sociology, thinking, and this is, you know, a little bit different, but feeling like I was on the bleachers learning about life and learning the names for things and how to analyze. And I was like, but I want to be in it. Like, mm-hmm. I want to feel it. I want it to be relational and organic. And a doctor, when I was going through a lot of stress with my mom, basically about a decade ago when I started that blog, she said, take a deep breath for me. And I was like, okay. And she was like, that's your deep breath? And I was like, yeah, what? And she's like, it's as if you are just living in your head. And I said, that is absolutely right. I was having trouble sleeping. It was causing like health issues mm-hmm. that kicked off seizures. Like, I was having all kinds of issues. I did not feel immersed. Mm-hmm. My body was like, you can't handle it. So my brain's like, I'm going to shut this down. It's too scary. Mm-hmm. Brain will take care of it. I'm just going to rationalize, box things up, think it through. You mm-hmm. never have to feel it again, mm-hmm. which is the other opposite, which just like not what I wanted. It was a coping mechanism that helped me now and again, I think, especially when I was younger. But now I'm like, no, I want to feel deeply. And I want to understand how, because it started feeling like I would drown.
Yeah.
Like if I really felt it all the way, I'd be gone. Yeah. It would swallow me up. And now I'm happy to say it's not swallowing me up. There are moments where I think, yep, I don't know, but I'm trying to not panic. It's mm-hmm. the panic that comes along with it that's not super helpful that I'm working on.
Drowning. Panic is the worst for drowning. Like it's real bad for drowning.
Right. Exactly. When you're actually drowning or you're metaphorically drowning, like either way.
It does feel like there's and this I feel a lot. Like I feel like there's a thing about bridges, like building bridges or building, like I have a really good feeling picture of it inside of me that I really don't have good words for it. But sometimes I try to describe it as like, I love how it feels to be in a lake and have the water, like be able to feel the water line, you know, and be like, oh, that part of me is dry and this part of me is wet. And then like be able to like, be like, oh, that's amazing.
Play with that. Yeah.
Dry. I think that making the transition, making it over and over again between this is just my head and this is just my like swirling inside. Sometimes I think about it as my head and my feelings, my thoughts and my feelings. Sometimes I think about, often I think about it as like structure and chaos. And I think chaos gets a bad rap, but I'm a big fan of chaos. And I think that it's always around, but my plan is to sort of a little bit revel mm-hmm. in it, but structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's, so one thing I thought about when you were talking earlier was again, this idea of duality mm-hmm. and both and. So not like, let's be done with chaos. Let's just mm-hmm. do structure. But how about we do structure and chaos?
Yeah.
It's hard to hold a place that's not resolved about what it is. It's both. Mm-hmm. And it's the both and. Mm-hmm. That was what was so hard when I was dealing with my mother. It's like my mother is alive and I love her. And she's toxic for me to be around. And both are true. And I don't need to, in order to sleep tonight, make my mind up about which camp I'm in. Like, yeah. I cannot have a camp. I can be sitting here.
Yeah, that is a nice, when you can get to that, that is,
yeah,
that's worth it. That's worth it.
It took a lot of time and effort. And, but it also took me giving myself permission mm-hmm. to sit there in the middle and say, mm-hmm. this is important and this is where I need to be. And no matter what people tell you or what you're being pushed or feel compelled to do, this is honoring that. And then I realized the grief that sat with me there wasn't bad. It was necessary. It mm-hmm. was beautiful even because, it, you know, what it showed me is that I loved her. Mm. If I didn't love her, if I didn't care about her, it would have been much more easy in a way. I would have just mm-hmm. been fending off people who were judging me, but not grieving the loss. And so it was beautiful. She loved me. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that it was like reciprocal love. Like mm-hmm. there was something mutual and alive. In my, it feels to me like in my experience, it is worth it to be able to be allowed the relationships. Relationships are not easy, no. you know?
Indeed.
And they're never, in my experience, they're very rarely simple or binary. And being more and more able to stay in them, mm. it feels good. And whatever it takes. I don't think there's a tool that's good for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's also good to remember. And I do think there are tools, all the different things. And you can use them as the direction suggests, or you can use them differently. Mm-hmm. You can use a knife to open a jar. Like there's many options for how to use a tool. Mm-hmm. But right, like your mother, that relationship was always, I mean, during the time when I knew Teresa, I think she was functioning really well.
Yeah. That was a good time.
That was a good time. Mm-hmm. She was easy to love. And also, it was so clear how much of her is in you. You're her. Like, you are her, as complex as she is, both just sort of like genetically, like, oh, look, that's Teresa, but also energetically, like, it's just she made you. Like, she made you in all the different ways there are to make a person. And like, you are clearly in her also, you know, like she made herself out of you. She both made you and made herself out of you. And I think that you did the same. And during those 4 years, you guys were really doing that. Mm-hmm. You were really involved in that with each other. And it was bright and warm and like full of sparklers. It was like sparklers at night. And Teresa felt problematic. And it was clear that it wasn't like sparklers, a thing that was going to sustain, you know, but it was also so clear that even though she as an external creature wasn't going to be able to sustain that, whatever that was that was happening inside of you with her right then mm-hmm. and had been mm-hmm. iterations and iterations of it was not going to go away. Like that's yeah. like, you know, how could it? It's you're deep, like it's so deep.
Yes, absolutely. First of all, let me say that at different stages in my process regarding my mother, if someone said, I see your mother in you, I would have been really defensive or hurt. But you know, what was really amazing is I felt really happy when you said that. I think coming to this new place of being like, yeah, and I'm glad. Yeah. And that felt wonderful, number one. Number two, we watched My Octopus Teacher.
Oh, yeah.
And it was lovely in so many ways. And if you haven't seen it, I suggest seeing it. But he talks about how a female octopus will lay eggs and then it takes all of her energy. She lived this life. She hid from predators. She was cagey. She found food. She found mm-hmm. shelter. She played with fish. I mean, it was so cool. And she had her babies and that was her energy. And they never know her. They never know this mm-hmm. amazing life that she had. Mm-hmm. And then they're off to do their own thing, but she's in them. Mm-hmm. And as you were talking, I was like, you know, my mother could not be there for me. But when she was, mm-hmm. when she could, yeah. she really shone brightly. And that's what I said in her memorial. Like when she was there, she was bright and she was almost intoxicating, which is why after a while, when it became very toxic, I had to have strong boundaries because I yeah. was like a moth to a flame. I was like, sure, I'll take it. And then I'm like, I'm injured. And so it became less fun. But you know, the stuff in me that from her has lasted.
How could it not? I don't think there's a way for you to get around it. And honestly, I think that if you did, if you were like, nope, I don't have feelings. I mean, that would just be lying, mm-hmm. which is fine. I think that is a totally reasonable, completely mm-hmm. fine thing to do. And I think it's useful to look around and see what opportunities there are not to. If an opportunity presents itself mm-hmm. to not, that is also really great. Because you're right. It's like she, all of it makes you, I mean, in my opinion, more beautiful, like more mesmerizing and stunning and beautiful.
Thank you.
And the life you're living, more mesmerizing and stunning and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And if she had been standard, not that anyone's standard, but if we right. could have like, if she had been easier to digest, like a
there less, you go. Right? Like, it's like, how do we put this? Not her, but yeah, easier to digest. I like it.
Like she was hard to peel and hold and you didn't want to really, like she yeah. was a tricky fruit to.
She was.
And if she had been less, then your life would be dazzling and spectacular in different ways. But this is the dazzling and spectacular that you got. And so when you get a kind of dazzling and spectacular that is sticky and prickly and maybe slightly poisonous, and who helps you figure out how to like still let's keep it, because so many of them are that. Mm-hmm. So many of them are that. And if we just reject all of them, it's just like less.
We lose out. We lose yeah. out on the experience, the wisdom, the lessons, the stretch. And as I've gotten older, this whole both and approach has allowed me, it's allowed me to really be honest about my love.
Yeah.
Because for yeah. a while I had to learn how to be honest about my pain. And then I had to learn how to come back around and be honest about the love.
Yeah.
And
Sasha, that's a big one. That's a yeah. big one. That feels really hugely important. And you're exactly right. It's like this was for me at any rate, maybe not for everyone, but for me for certain, it's a requirement for if I want to actually love and be loved, I cannot. Because my only option, my option isn't to not feel the strange swirling. Mm-mm. It's just to hide it. Mm-hmm. Some people maybe have an option of not feeling it, or maybe they're swirling everything chaotic, like mm-hmm. mucky underground is just like small or something. But for whom it's not, my option is just to lie. And it's hard to love someone who's not telling you who they are, you know?
Right. Who's hiding away parts. And sometimes that's protective. And like you say, I mean, I'm sure we've all done that at times in different ways, consciously or not.
Yeah. And like when I think about the idea of you not having all of that, like of you somehow being a person who could imagine a version of you that could set Teresa aside, I think I feel sad. Like that feels to me so much loss, because you're inability to set her aside, the requirement that is placed on you because of your biology or whatever, like past lives, that makes you not able to do that is so good for me. It's so good for me, Sasha. So if you are on the fence, now you can really commit, because it's really working out for me. So I want you to just let go of any uncertainty. I like it. Keep it
I'm
up.
Glad you like it. I am so glad.
I think that is an important little piece of it. Like we're doing it for ourselves, and we're doing it for, we actually are doing it for each other.
Well, I think because when we say, whether we name it or we show it or however, here's my blue acorn shaped thing. I think mm-hmm. it goes back to other things we talked about, like vulnerability and being like, I have a thing. Yeah. And I think it helps other people notice their things and maybe share. And then we can know each other more intimately.
Yeah. And that would be so nice. And even right? if it's just small little patches, like small little you know, like warm spots in the ocean. You know how sometimes you swim into a spa in the ocean and you're like, oh my God, yeah, what's going on here?
Always think it's
so maybe
urine. So if it's
whale pee.
Where's the
even if we're just like a little pockets of delightful whale pee in the ocean. That's okay. I'm comfortable with that.
I enjoy the warmth. I don't need to spy
the whole thing. Yeah. And I don't need to change the whole thing. But like, I like the idea of saying, let's use every single tool that shows up in order to do this, in order to be more revealed.
And not push our tools on others.
Yeah.
I think this is one thing that is problematic is when we're like, I found a tool that works. Here's what you should do. Mm-hmm. This will work for you. You just need to do it. And if you're not seeing success, it's because you're not doing it and you're not doing it right, which is like defeats the whole purpose. Mm-hmm. Like you say, there are a lot of ways to like open a jar. You can use a knife. Yeah. You can use a this. You can use a that. Just the point is to eat, to open the thing so you can eat. So like however works for you and just more at the buffet table, more options, more ideas. And some may not resonate. Some it's like, actually, I'd rather not even go there. Yeah. And if that helps you eat, then do that.
Then do that. Do whatever the thing you need to do is. And I'm just going to, I'm totally going to watch you. And I'm going to absolutely jot down notes. Because why not? Like, I want to see what works and like what isn't working. But also, I benefit when you eat.
Interesting.
A hungry person is less stable. A hungry person is less safe. Mm. So however you get fed makes me more safe.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, I think that's true. It's good for your community.
It is good for your community.
It has reverberating effects. Yeah. And it felt selfish to me at first. Like, why focus on me? Why like do this work? And then it's like, oh, it's really good. It became clear it was really good as a parent to do this work so that I wasn't dragging them through it. But even for my community here, and especially my friends. And
And who even knows? We don't even know who will show up.
Yeah.
I like that during the span of this conversation, we've used, I think, probably like 47 different metaphors to describe. So if somebody wanted to just like make an evolution, like a family tree.
But I do think it would be really awesome to chart our metaphors.
I want to keep that in the episode because I want somebody to do that. Like maybe someone will do that. Please draw me
a picture.
It would
be great to chart the metaphors. Yes. I would love to see a picture of that.
Okay, so let's edit in for the very end. Dear listening audience, we are not joking. Please chart our metaphors.
We would love that. We would love to see what you make. Yes. All right.
Send us your charts and graphs. Please chart our chaos. Like literally.
Yes,
we
chart the chaos.
Literally chart our chaos.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to Will Lewis for editing and to Parsa Shahnpour for his original scoring.
If you would like to learn more about the work we do at the Portland Grief House, you can check us out at griefhouse.org and find and follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
If you have a comment, question, or potential guest you'd like us to consider for a future episode, please reach out to us by email at info@griefhouse.org.
Thanks so much for being here.
See you next time.